This episode contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes, which may be disturbing to some listeners.
Today, we're bringing you the story of a young woman whose remains were discovered in the late 1980s, but whose identity eluded police for three decades.
This is APB Cold Case. Here's your host, former police chief Mark Spahn.
We start our story on a cold, bleak day back in January of 1988 at a vacant and crumbling distillery in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. Here's former Bensalem PD detective Christopher McMullen.
So in January of 1988, some people were walking along the abandoned Publicker distillery, which is on State Road in Bensalem, just very close to the Delaware River. State Road runs parallel to the Delaware River. And the Publicker distillery was a big distillery, became defunct and abandoned. At this point, the only thing that remains is a smokestack. Back in the 80s, there were still a lot of buildings there. And also what still remains, although most of them are buried now, are what I would describe as an underground pump house. And they were these concrete bulkheads that came out of the ground, and they had a square opening that was big enough for an adult to go down. There was a steel ladder that was bolted to it, and it was how you could go in and out of it. And there was a very big pipe down there. When I say big, I mean it was like probably 2 feet wide, where you could sit on it. And these people, they were walking along, they looked down it, they see a skeleton. At first they thought it may have been a mannequin. I remember speaking to the woman years later. She was pretty traumatized by it.
Detective McMullen was not at the original scene in 1988, but he describes a photograph from the case file.
Looking down the bulkhead, and there is a human skeleton laying on it, and she's laying on her back, and she's wearing jeans, and she had a purple blouse. You know, her clothes were very tattered, but she was completely skeletal. It was always my gut feeling that she was placed there. She definitely didn't fall, because it was at least 10, 12 feet, and she had no injuries consistent with falling. And I don't think she would have landed the way she laid. I mean, it was almost like she was laid there with a little bit of reverence or respect. I don't know if whoever placed her there knew her. I have my theories. So the police are called, the police come out, and they recover an entire human skeleton along with fetal bones that were literally within the remains of the adult skeleton, indicating that she was pregnant at the time. I believe she was estimated being about 5 to 6 months pregnant at the time.
I asked the detective if there was anything else found at the scene.
There was clothing on the body, some jewelry, and there was also other articles of clothing that were scattered around, a couple different pairs of shoes, some other changes of clothes, and seemed like, well, maybe whoever this girl was, maybe she had been a runaway, or she had been traveling, and she had these. There was no bag, though. It was like they were just discarded with her remains.
Police checked for any local missing person reports fitting the description of their Jane Doe, but there were no matches. And I want you to remember that for later in the episode. There were no matches. And without an ID or any witnesses, investigators don't have much to go on. You might be wondering about DNA, because DNA testing was coming into prominence in the 80s, but they needed a viable sample, which they most likely could not get from skeletal remains at the time. And so they're unable to identify her. She becomes known as Publicker Jane Doe, and the investigation into her identity goes cold, until in 2002, Bensalem Police Detective Christopher McMullen is recovering from an injury, and he's assigned to light duty. He continues to work all of his current cases, but he's handed a couple of cold case files. He digs right into the first file, which is labeled Tracy Byrd. Now, if you've already listened to our episode about the Tracy Byrd case, a few of these details may sound familiar, but stick with me, because the investigations of these cases are intertwined, and there are still more surprises to come. So, McMullen starts investigating 14-year-old Tracy Byrd, who went missing in 1983. He goes down several avenues to locate her, including investigating Jane Doe's. During his investigation, he comes across the Jane Doe found in the Publicker well in 1988. Could this be Tracy?
When I was looking into that Jane Doe, also known as Publicker Jane Doe, everything on that fit. The body was about give or take a mile from where Tracy lived. It was found about a mile in her hometown.
Anthropology on the remains indicated that this was a white female, about 5'4" and 110 pounds, and her age estimated between 17 and 23. Tracy was just 14 when she went missing, but there could be some margin of error. And this Jane Doe was about 6 months pregnant. Clothing found with the body included Braxton stretch denim jeans, a purple camisole top, black bodysuit, white dress, black stockings, two rings, and two pairs of shoes. By this time, there had been huge strides made in DNA testing, so McMullen decides to go back for a DNA sample from the remains found in the well.
So I was able to take all the bones, the remains from Jane Doe, and I sent them to the Center for Human Identification. They extracted DNA and uploaded her profile into CODIS. So now I'm hoping, okay, we're going to get a family reference sample. It's either going to be from the Bird family or another jurisdiction's going to put in a sample from somebody that has a missing relative, and we're going to get a hit. So obviously, you know, I track down all of Tracy Bird's family and I get DNA from all of them that I can.
The DNA results come back, but surprisingly, it's not a match. It's not Tracy. And even though the cold case file he's specifically working on is Tracy Bird, Detective McMullen is not going to give up on this Jane Doe.
My whole thing was somebody has got to be missing this girl. Somebody has got to recognize this girl. And if they don't recognize where she was found, they may recognize maybe the sculpture or the 3D image looks something like her, or I had the pictures of the jewelry on the internet. Somebody would know that. You know, she had this ring. It would look like a belt buckle. It was very distinctive. And then I tried isotope analysis. You know, they take isotopes from the bones, and there was a little bit of hair that was found. And it's something to do with the water supply of different regions. They can somewhat accurately tell you that person's from this state or this region.
According to Eric Bartlink in an article in the Forensic Sciences Research Journal, isotope analysis examines teeth, bones, hair, and nails to predict a region of origin for unidentified human remains. This technology can help investigators in considering an area where a person was born or lived, their long-term residence, recent travel history, and diet. Detective McMullen also sought to have phenotyping done, an advancement in DNA technology that develops a physical profile of what a person might look like based on their DNA. As the tests are being conducted, he continues to pursue other leads, one of them from detectives in his own department who suggested that his Jane Doe could be Jeanette Rose Tamby, a 22-year-old who went missing in 1984. She was also from the Bensalem area. Detective McMullen locates a brother of Jeanette who provides a DNA sample. His DNA is entered into CODIS, a national DNA database, for comparison to any unidentified human remains. And once again, McMullen waits for the results. The last time he waited for DNA in this case, he was surprised to learn that the remains were not Tracy Bird. But then, he gets a call about the DNA sample he submitted from Jeanette Tamby's brother.
A couple months go by. I remember I got to work, and there was a letter on my desk from the Center for Human Identification. And literally as I'm opening the letter, my phone rings. It was them. And they called me and said, you know, we got a mitochondrial hit on your family reference DNA sample for Joseph Tamby. And I'm like, that's it. That's Jane Doe. I know who she is.
But then his moment of excitement once again turns to surprise. There was a match to a Jane Doe, but it's not the one he's expecting.
And they're like, yeah, she's a Jane Doe that was found in Buena Township, New Jersey in August of 1986. And I'm like, what?
It was another bittersweet moment for McMullen. The remains found in the well were not Tracy Bird, and they were not Jeanette Tamby. But at least the Tamby family has gotten some answers. Jeanette's body, found in New Jersey back in 1986, had finally been identified. And now the New Jersey State Police get a fresh lead in their murder investigation. You can hear more about that case in an upcoming episode called Tortured. Now, back to the girl in the well. We still don't know who she is. In 2012, 10 years after Detective McMullen learned about the Jane Doe in the well, there had been enough advances in DNA technology for the lab to develop a partial genetic DNA profile. In 2019, that profile was uploaded to GEDmatch, a website for genetic genealogy researchers. But unfortunately, the sample was found to be insufficient to develop a family tree. Then, McMullen poses another theory, that Jane Doe could be the victim of an infamous California murderer.
There was a theory that was brought to me by a person from out on the West Coast named Kathy DeBono that maybe she was a victim of a guy named Victor Paleologus. He's currently serving he's almost at the end of a 25-year sentence. He committed a homicide out in Los Angeles. He killed a girl named Christy Johnson. He used to go around to girls and tell them, I'm a casting director, I'm a talent agent, and I'm going to make you the next Bond girl. They would meet at secluded areas to do photo shoots, and he would assault them. He ultimately killed a woman, this girl Christy, but he had attacked some other women that got away, and they all testified against him in his trial. Some of the similarities were he would tell them, let's do a photo shoot in an isolated area. Bring extra clothing with you. And my Jane Doe, she was wearing designer jeans, blouses and things like that. And then come to find out, although Victor Paleologus was in jail in California, in 1985, he lived in Bensalem.
Remember, Jane Doe was found in the well with multiple pieces of clothing, jeans, two tops, a dress, stockings, and two pairs of shoes.
I actually had a little bit of a buy-in to that theory because nobody around our area recognized her. It was worth a shot.
Years pass and the investigation stalls. But in 2019, a renowned crime scene specialist starts working on the case. Her focus? DNA evidence and forensic genealogy.
The Bensalem police had a contract with Bodie Labs, and they did that DNA extraction for us pro bono. And then I teamed up with a woman named Yolanda McClary. She's a genealogist. Once we got Jane Doe's profile uploaded and Yolanda actually started working and building the family tree, I could not keep up with her.
Amazingly, a female relative of the girl in the well is identified. An excited Detective McMullen called the first cousin whom McClary had found in the Pocono area of Pennsylvania. He told me it was a very strange phone call. You're asking someone about a possible relative who's suspected of being missing or dead.
And I told her the whole thing, and she was absolutely, she was excited about it, and she wanted to help me. And she said, I was adopted. She said, I don't know much about my biological family. As much as she wanted to help me, she didn't have the knowledge. You know, so you run into twists and turns like that.
But then, a few days later, Detective McMullen gets a text message from Yolanda McClary telling him to check your email.
Check my email. And she sent me two names, Linda Todd and Joseph Todd, who both lived in Philadelphia. And she said, your Jane Doe is their sister. And I'm like, wow, that's a pretty powerful statement.
Detective McMullen had never given up. This was the result he'd been hoping for, waiting for. He couldn't reach Linda Todd by phone, so he immediately starts looking for a telephone number for Joseph Todd. Instead, he finds a number for a woman he thought would be Joseph's daughter, Kristen. He called the number and left a message.
She called me back. So again, I told her who I was and I explained the situation. And I said, did your father ever have, I didn't even say sister, I just said ever have a sibling that vanished? And she paused for a second and she said, she wasn't even born when this happened, but she said, yeah, he did. She said he had a sister that disappeared. She said around 1985. And I said, what was her name? And she said, Lisa. So literally, I'm just like, that's her. Her name is Lisa. I'm literally looking at her skull on my desk. I'm like, Lisa Todd. I said, where's dad at? She said, he's on his way home from work. I said, I need to speak with your father. Can you give him my name and number? 20 minutes later, Joseph calls me and he was just beside himself in a, you know, world of emotion. He said, you found my sister? I said, I believe we did. So I asked him for his address. I said, can we come down and talk with you?
It was a cold, rainy Friday night in December, but that wasn't going to stand in the way of McMullen and his detectives going to see the man who they believed was the brother of their Jane Doe. After 3 decades, they were about to give her a name other than Jane.
myself and two other detectives. We spoke with him. I brought him the photographs of the clothing and the jewelry. He immediately looked at that belt buckle ring and said, "That's my sister's ring." It was a really good feeling. All right, it was worth hanging in there all those years. You know, and I explained to him, I said, "Listen, she was found in 1988. I said, but the identity was the problem. And that case had been in the local papers and Bensalem borders Philly. I mean, where she was found and where she lived, by car, 15 minutes. She was not far from home. It just blows my mind. So I said, was she ever reported missing? Now, he was younger than her, and she was 17 when she went missing. And he said, yeah. He said, "I remember the police being at my parents' house, and I remember them talking to the patrol officer."
So remember at the beginning of the podcast when we said that police found no matches similar to the body of the girl in the well? We now know that Lisa Todd had been reported missing in October of 1985 by her parents. But without explanation, Philadelphia PD took her record out of NCIC on her 18th birthday, even though she was still missing.
In December, on her 18th birthday, she was purged from the NCIC system as missing with no follow-up, and she was taken out of the system. So 3 years later, when my agency found her, there was no missing person reports. The NCIC entry of her missing persons report even said she was pregnant. So they probably would have pieced it together. But I don't understand that. And I could never get an explanation for that. Again, I won't pull punches on that. I don't know why Philadelphia took her out of NCIC. I mean, just because you have an 18th birthday doesn't mean you're not missing. How many other times has this happened? How many juveniles were in the system as missing, and upon their 18th birthday, it was taken out and they're still missing? And they're probably a John or a Jane Doe somewhere, just like Lisa Todd was. I would love to see nationwide legislation to go back and find those purged records and do a follow-up. Hey, is this person ever returned? That just blew my mind. To be very honest with you, it pissed me off. I mean, Lisa's mom and dad died before she was found.
We wanted to find out more about Lisa, so we reached out to some former friends. They told us that Lisa was a very nice girl, and she should be remembered that way. And a friend of the family said that Lisa started hanging out with a different group of people and that she was influenced by those friends. Lisa dropped out of Frankfort High School during the 9th grade, and she had a 2-year-old. At the time of her disappearance, she was 6 months pregnant, living with her boyfriend, who we'll call Joe, and his family. We don't have any information about the last time she was known to have been seen, but we learned that Lisa and Joe did argue a lot, according to his brother, who assumed that Lisa left to get away from Joe. As we mentioned, Lisa Todd had a 2-year-old son when she went missing in 1985. Detective McMullen called the son, who was 37 years old when they discovered Lisa's identity.
He always spent his entire life thinking his mother abandoned him, which now he knows that's not the case. And he actually flew into town and we met, you know, my partner and I, we shared the entire case file with him. He's a nice guy. And he said, "Listen, you have no idea how much I appreciate you doing this." Even though it wasn't a happy ending, it was very bittersweet, but now he knew that his mother didn't abandon him. They had a funeral for her in Philadelphia, which I attended. It was nice to at least give them some closure.
The mystery of the identity of the girl in the well was finally solved, but the cause and manner of her death are still listed as undetermined. For Detective McMullen, he believes that Lisa Todd's death is a homicide.
For several reasons. One, she had a small fracture on her right maxilla, on her cheek. She also had a chipped tooth. And she was a 17-year-old girl that went missing, was found hidden in a well in an abandoned building. To me, that suggests some foul play.
Detective McMullen has an idea who the suspect is, but he's not making that public.
Whoever killed her, and I have a very good theory on as to who killed her, I think placed her there and hid her there because they were aware of that location. And like I said, she didn't fall. And if she was deceased when she was brought there, she wasn't just dropped down that hole. She was placed there.
I asked McMullen about his suspect.
He knows he's a suspect. I'll tell you that. That's all I'll say at this point.
For now, Detective McMullen takes solace in the fact that Lisa Todd's been identified and that her family knows at least some of the story.
even with her son, he and I had talked at her funeral, and he realizes that, you know, there may never be enough to file charges, and he's okay with that. He said, look, I'm taking my mom home with me, and whoever did this to her has lived a terrible life and will continue until his last days.
And that is at least part of the story of Lisa Todd, how she went from a Jane Doe to being identified, and how police methodically and scientifically worked through the possibilities. She was not Tracy Byrd, she was not Jeanette Tamby, and she was not another victim of Victor Paleologos. Detective McMullen has worked a number of cold cases, seeking answers and justice for families of those missing or murdered. He describes it as a healthy obsession.
There's a story by a woman named Lauren Isley. I had heard it one time and it really made a lot of sense. And the way it goes is that there's a young boy walking along a beach after a storm, and all along the coast, there's scattered thousands of starfish. And the boy is walking along and he's picking up starfish and he's throwing them back in the ocean. And he encounters this elderly male, supposedly very wise in his years. And he says, you know, young man, what are you doing? And he says, I have to throw the starfish back in the water or they'll die. And the man says to him, he says, young man, take a look around. There are thousands of starfish. How can you possibly make a difference? And with that, the boy picks up a starfish, throws it, and says, I made a difference to that one. And that theory to me was, you know what? We made a difference to Jeanette Tamby's family. We made a difference to Lisa Todd's family. So that's why. Why do a cold case? That's why.
The Lisa Todd case is still an open homicide investigation. She's not been forgotten by her family or by police. Hopefully, someone out there has a piece of the puzzle that will help solve this mystery. If you have any information about the murder of Lisa Todd, call Ben Salem Detectives at 215-633-3719.
Thanks for listening to APB Cold Case. Tell us about your cold case at apbcoldcase@spawngroup.com. APB Cold Case is an original Spawn Group production.